Today's show, ACC Media Day question. What is the definition of is? How good can Miami be? Some ACC sleepers, LSU recruiting, and we got a new favorite bear, maybe.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
You meet a grizzly bear conflict specialist from Banff at a cocktail party? I'm not moving.
Russ Dellinger.
It's a gentleman's agreement.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I would rather have coffee with us than coffee with them.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and it is ACC Media Days begin Monday, which is 1 hour. Big Ten Media Days on Tuesday. Need to schedule a little distance between them, a little better than that, but whatever, this is what we got. We are going to get to more Big Ten on the next show and more ACC today. And of course, like any great media day to get you hyped up for the season, the big storyline is a conglomeration of lawsuits being filed.
College sports, baby.
Nothing gets you hyped. Nothing makes you want to buy a couple tickets, right? Dust off the grill, call your friends, get fired up for the big game. Some Saturday on a nice, beautiful, crisp October day. Then hearing about, you know, whether a court has deemed the venue change appeal to be justified.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's stirring, much like, the marching band playing the fight song is seeing whether or not the word is going to decide the validity of the grant of rights. That's actually a real thing there.
SEC just means more. ACC is just more petty. We fight. But Clemson and Florida State are trying to get out. Are you capable of discussing this is situation? The Clemson is, Pat, or are you not up on it?
I'm kind of up on is.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, so Ross, you might need to backstop me on this, but the grant of rights uses a present tense word to describe league membership and thus the tie of your media rights revenue to the league. And I believe the Clemson argument is or could be that if you say is and we've left and we're was, then why do we still owe you any of our money? So that's what we're down to in the semantic battle and the legal parsing of this mysterious document, this grant of rights that, like, Florida State is sued to get the thing and they're going to. It's going to be released, but it's heavily redacted and it can't be shown outside of, you know, a small circle of people. I mean, this is like the original Magna Carta or something, you know, that's under glass in some museum in Britain. This is the grant of rights for the ACC.
Yeah, the is-was debate is fascinating, but also seems incredibly silly. But then again, you know, they're trying to find any way to get an exit here. And right now, one of the ways is to... is present tense versus past tense and what it means for in the grant of rights. I'm sure there'll be a big topic here. I'm in Charlotte, as you can see the beautiful skyline above my bed there in the hotel room. It's a lovely hotel, by the way. No internet access. Good. It's good. I'm sure this will be a big topic of discussion during day one. Jim Phillips will give his by the time you listen to this, he has given his speech. And I'm really curious to see what he's going to say on the subject because it's kind of the elephant in the room. I mean, it's the first media days, obviously, since both lawsuits were filed, Clemson back in February and Florida State in December. And it should be interesting. Florida State's turn on the circuit is also today, day one on Monday. They'll go after Jim Phillips speaks, I believe. So So that should all be interesting.
Is, was. So good. Ooh. So good.
You got the burning spear in Tallahassee. You got the Tiger Pond running down the hill in Clemson. You've got, you know, these other great traditions across the league, but there is no tradition that's better than is versus was.
Please define is. Coach William Christopher Sweeney, could you define the word is for us?
Wasn't there, that was part of the, the Clinton Lewinsky thing where the definition of what is.
Yeah. I'm not sure what they ever resolved on that. I think he was guilty. I don't really recall the history of that. I don't like to get into politics here, so don't shoot me if I was wrong. I don't know what the hell that was about. Anyway, this is there's other reports. I think ESPN reported they're not planning on saying they want out next year or 2024, 2025 year. So it's maybe a little bit, they got a little bit of a run up here. In terms of on field, right? And I think that was expected, right, Ross? I think you've reported some of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have to August 15th to say they want out. Like
for the following football season.
Yeah. And that is not expected to happen.
Right. That's really soon. In fact, I mean, the year after that is soon, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of people in the league were looking at 27. But 26 is possible, but certainly 25 is way, way too soon.
Yeah. Whatever your definition of dumpster fire is really what we're down to at this point. What can happen on the field to maybe help out? And this is a question, I think, as we go into this playoff it's important. Is how important is it for the ACC, Big 12 as well, they talked about it last week at the Big 12, and we talked about this, to get multiple teams in this inaugural playoff for perception and for power, influence, whatever. Look, there's 12 spots. Three spots of the 12 are guaranteed to non-Big 10 SEC teams. Group of five gets one spot. The ACC gets one spot. The Big 12 gets one spot. Other than that, everything's up for grabs. The SEC and Big Ten will get one also. But it seems to me it is very important for the future of this sport in terms of stability all over the place and it being a true national sport that we do not enter the 2024 playoff with five SEC teams, four Big Tens, and one for everybody else, one each. And that is an onus on the Big 12 and the ACC to punch and get themselves in. Now, a year ago, the ACC had I forget the record. Was it? Someone's going to have
to remember. It was a winning record against the SEC.
6-3, I think
that was it. I want to say that was it. So, pre-bowl games.
That was a lot of the
A lot of the chatter, right? Yeah. And it deserved it because the SEC just skates through. Every year, it's like, oh, look how strong we are. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Alabama's really good. Like some of those years, you're not really sure. And last year, they did not prove themselves outside the conference, but they walk into this year with the presumption of enormous strength. And I'm not really going to debate that. They are very strong, and there are a lot of great teams in the SEC. But you also have to earn it. So they're sitting pretty. But the ACC, to me, I can see the Big 12 beating itself up in this wild kind of rock fight of a chase that's going to be a lot of fun, but may not be preferable if you're trying to get a couple teams in. The ACC seems like the league that's more likely to have multiple teams in. What do you think, Ross, on that?
Yeah, the parity in the Big 12 seems we talked about it quite a bit, right? I think it's the most parity, and so you could see them beating each other up. I mean, you could realistically see like a three-loss Big 12 champion because of how much parity there is top to bottom in the league. And you look at the ACC, it's kind of the opposite, right? There's the top of the league with about, you know, four or five programs up there. And then there's maybe a very small middle, and then there's a big bottom to the league. There's not as much parity when you look at history and the resources and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Florida State, Clemson, Miami, you know, Virginia Tech, I think could be sneaky good, actually get into that mix this year. And it maybe a North Carolina or NC State. You could see two of those six teams maybe trying to distance themselves. But if you're in the ACC, the problem is your second best team, which might be, you know, say 10-2 or something like that at the end of the year, is going to compete in the ACC championship game. And it's going to be interesting to see how the committee handles the loser of these championship games. And the Big 12 end in the ACC. The loser of the championship game in the SEC and the Big 10 is in, right? We probably pretty much know that. It's going to be the second best team there. But the loser in the ACC in the Big 12 championship game could have three losses. It certainly could have two losses. And how are they going to handle that stacked up with even other teams in the league, maybe the third best finisher? So that's pretty fascinating dynamic there that could play out.
Absolutely. I think those championship games will carry a lot of payload and potential penalty, really, if you lose it, if you've had a good season. But, you know, I think the conundrum for the ACC is your two best football programs are the ones that want to get out. And so, yes, you want two in, but what if it's two that have spent the last year agitating to leave your league, and this would reinforce their point that, hey, we're carrying this league here in Florida State and in Clemson. And so there's a little bit of a double-edged sword there. I think there are other good teams. I think watch out for SMU coming sailing in. Ross mentioned Miami. I think NC State and Louisville also could be kind of in the periphery there, and things break right, they could end up in a championship ACC championship game. But there's no doubt that, I mean, when you are fighting not just for credibility, but really to, you know, buoy your existence, that the ACC could really benefit from a broadly successful year. And to Dan's point, there's no doubt the benefit of the doubt always goes to the SEC, regardless of what happens in non-conference play. And last year they weren't good in non-conference play, and they still, you know, got their champion in there in Alabama. And a lot of people said, well, Georgia should have gotten in too. Well, you know, Florida State was the undefeated team that got left out. That turn is just the difference in benefit of doubt that goes to SEC versus ACC. And if you look at it, you know, like Florida State's schedule set up for a great start. They're obviously replacing a lot of good players, but they also have gotten a lot of good players. And they start Georgia Tech neutral, more or less, then Boston College at home, Memphis at home, Cal at home, and then they're at SMU September 28th, Clemson October 5th, and then late October at Miami, early November at Notre Dame. So that's where the rubber will hit the road, I think, for the Seminoles. And with Clemson, it's right away. Noon Saturday, August 31st, Georgia in Atlanta. And then, you know, things are not as hard after that, but that's going to be an immediate credibility game there. And people will draw broad conclusions and assumptions based on how they look. So Clemson needs to show up ready.
A couple things there. So the Atlantic and the Coastal divisions are gone, or
they are.
They're gone. Okay, right, because we now have bi-coastal. We'll get to some of the absurdities here.
Yeah.
Don't be alarmed when you see Stanford roaming around the Atlantic coast.
Today, seeing Stanford roaming around Charlotte should be interesting. Stanford and Cal there. This is that like Cal, you know. Seeing Arizona and Arizona State and Utah and the Big 12 meet, it's not that. Especially it was in Vegas and Texas and Oklahoma. We've known they were coming for years at the SEC. This is the first one that's like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Also kind of odd, an interesting banner in the lobby of the hotel where ACC Media Days is taking place. Usually conferences will put on display banners that highlight, you know, their successes. One of the ACC banners is toughest non-conference schedule in the country, which I found interesting. That's a new one. Mm-hmm. Hadn't seen that one.
Do they have that? Do they have that stat somehow?
I don't know.
I'm sure it's factual. The good people at the ACC wouldn't be.
Yeah.
How they come up with that?
Well, I tell you what helps is playing five games against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's non-conference.
That improves your non-conference schedule. Yep. And then you're playing, you got some Georgia in there. You got some other SEC schools.
I mean, well, then you got all the games that they play, you know, the Florida State.
Right. Yeah.
You got a lot of SEC head-up matchups there at the end.
Yeah.
Toughest non-conference. We'll get to some of the absurdities. The new backyard brawl, Boston College, Cal, should be something else. So that's a neighborhood scrap. So with the championship game, and I do find this interest because we were all very, I don't expect they ever really will get rid of the championship games. The SEC, some of the coaches made a pretty impassioned plea to keep it. And I don't blame them. I think that game is the outlier. In terms of how exciting it is and how much it means and what it and all of that and the whole scene in Atlanta. Everyone else tried to duplicate that. Probably only the Big Ten comes close, and I still don't think it really, because of the way the Big Ten has broken down through the years, it's always just been like the exhale generally, particularly when Ohio State or Michigan are in it, although Ohio State lost one of those to Michigan State. The famed Urban Meyer eating pizza on the back of a golf cart game.
I was there. I watched him eat that pizza.
Worst part, it's Indianapolis pizza.
Yeah. It was like Papa John's or something, I mean, too. It wasn't even like a local joint.
Yeah, it wasn't even. Know? Like, poor Urban. Sad Urban eating pizza.
Sad Urban.
It's really fun. I mean, the man's won two national titles, one of the greatest coaches we've ever had. And, like, it's probably his most famous post-game picture is him sitting on the back of a golf cart. College football is fantastic. Eating a bad piece of pizza that was no doubt baked like 6 hours prior in a chain restaurant in Indianapolis.
Absolutely.
Good times. But it's a perfect example of like, okay, if Clemson and Florida State play October 5, that's going to be a great game, right? One of them's going to win the game. There's time to recover. There's time to move on. Clemson and Florida State meet again on December, whatever the date is, 5th or something like that, and one of them loses, can you stay in that playoff? And, you know, does this championship game situation actually hurt you? We have seen teams in the SEC and the Big Ten get in without winning their division. Alabama's done it. Ohio State's done it. And even by even Ohio State losing, say, to Michigan and then having that one more week of a little bit of a break. Now, granted, they have they have very good resume, but having that week off and then it was 2 years ago, USC loses the Pac-12 championship game and Ohio State jumps in. And, you know, and I argued at the time, just as a philosophical argument, you can't make, after 12 games, you can't make someone play a 13th game while the other one only plays 12. And so, but you can't, but that's how it is. The perception's like, oh, okay, we'll move them up. You're not going to get that break. And so does this kind of cannibalize the ACC? Now, look, if they get Clemson, Florida State, and they're playing this thing in Charlotte, it'll be a big scene and all that. But I wonder where that goes in terms of how much it can hurt you when you only have a few contending teams and you're trying to get that second spot, if not a third spot, something like that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a legitimate concern. And, you know, we'll have to see where the fault line kind of falls in terms of whether you're in contention or out of contention. If the loser falls out of contention, you know, if let's just game this out that, you know, the Clemson is 8th and Florida State is 11th in the playoff rankings. And then does the loser drop out if you lose by a touchdown or whatever in the championship game? I don't know. But one thing I will say about that banner that Ross was talking about, that is early positioning. Like, hey, we play hard schedules too. It's not just the SEC that's going to play a hard schedule. So we are going to hear more politicking. It's an election year, but it's a big politics year in college football, too, because everybody's going to be politicking to get a bunch of teams into that tournament.
That is interesting, Pat, because, well, going back to Dan's point about the championship game, for sure, it could be a detriment to those programs, because that second best team could take it a third or fourth loss in that game. And then all of a sudden, you don't get anybody other than your champion. It is an interesting point about the banner, right? Because I mean, we haven't even kicked off fall camp in, right? And already we have politicking when it comes to playoff berths.
For a league as established as the ACC, and this is a little absurd to come up with. I mean, they've won multiple national championships during the playoff era. They have in Clemson, Florida State, and Miami, three of the more decorated teams of this programs of this century. There's a lot of strength, you know, a lot of good programs. Carolina, NC State, Pitt's had days, you know, Virginia Tech's had days. Is that Clemson? Am I overstating how important that Clemson Georgia game is for this league? Yeah, maybe it shouldn't be this. I don't think it should. So again, they went 6-3 against the SEC last year, something like that. But Clemson beats Georgia in Atlanta to open the season would be unbelievably significant for the league. And it shouldn't have to prove itself like that, but it just, I don't know, the way where we're at just feels like just be an absolutely monstrous game for the whole league's perception.
No doubt. I think so. It is a huge centerpiece. I mean, right there, noon, the first Saturday of college football season, people are going to be so excited for the season and to watch that game. And we all overreact. That's why we have an overreaction podcast on Sundays. But that will be probably the biggest potential overreaction game. If Clemson loses, it's not like, oh my gosh, we're doomed. Now, if they get trucked, okay, it's not going to be good. You know, if they lose like Oregon lost to Georgia in Mercedes-Benz a couple of years ago, that's a bad look. But if they're competitive and they lose, you know, 21-14, figuring relatively low scoring with these two teams, I don't think it's terrible. If they win, it's huge. It's absolutely huge for getting Clemson vaulted back into serious contender status and getting a really big credibility boosting win. So, you know, I don't think you can overstate the importance of that one. No.
Just because of the status, it's so uncertain. And, you know, Pat, you brought up a good point. Like you want Florida State. So the ACC is not going to make as much money as the Big Ten and the SEC. It's just not, there's not a magic wand. There's not a commissioner that could come in and renegotiate a deal. Maybe the deal isn't that great. Maybe this, that, whatever. There's just demographics at play. There's just historic fan bases at play, particularly when you're talking about the Big Ten. A lot of the teams in the Big Ten have never really been that good, but they represent pretty good sized states and they have an unbelievable connection to that state that you just can't quite create. And so they have some huge brands. Obviously they've added some more, but the strength of the Big Ten is just, it's just this regional thing. And same with the SEC. So yeah, Mississippi's not a really a big state, not a wealthy state, but man, everyone's all in on it. Right. When you listen to like I think half the country music chart involves like college football references now. I'm fortunate with my daughters, I'm hearing more of these songs, but like, you know, the big things like, really? Oh my God, I like the guy so much, I'm going to wear a Tennessee orange jersey. Right. Like that. It's like, this is the conundrum of the song. You're not singing that in the ACC, right? There's no country song about, oh my God, he's a Wake Forest guy. What am I going to do? I'm a Georgia Tech girl. You know, how is this? It's not a romantic song. So that's the just the strength. They're never going to have that kind of thing. You're never going to get these fans. You're not ever going to get Boston to be behind Boston College because they're behind all the other teams in Boston. It's just the way it is. Pitt, pretty good football program they got at Pitt. Really is. They got a pretty good fan base, but they ain't the Steelers.
No.
So it's just the way it is. So they're never going to have the money. But what they do have for Florida State and Clemson, and I understand what you're arguing about is, the definition of is, we're probably past the point of no return. But what they have is, you want to get into the playoff, man? Like,
right.
I mean, this Florida, this Clemson schedule, you take Georgia out. They play Georgia. Then they got App State. Not easy, but App State. NC State's going to be a really nice game. They got Stanford. Ought to beat them. They get the Florida State game. Then they're at Wake, Virginia, Louisville. We said, tricky team. At Virginia Tech, at Pitt, Citadel. And you finish with South Carolina. Like, it's a pretty nice path for Clemson to get into this playoff. It's a pretty nice path to be 10-2. And you're the one who scheduled Georgia. You can go schedule Georgia because you know you got getting in the playoff. I think what we're going to find out is what is the financial value of that hosting a game. If you host, maybe they win the league. How much more donations? How much more sales? What do you get out of being in the playoff? And yeah, it's not guaranteed money, right? Just to simple terms, I know it's I got to bridge a $20 million gap. Well, one way to bridge that gap is go to the playoff like 5 years out of six. You'll bridge it a little. You may not get all the way there, but your team's winning, you're exciting, you're driving donations, you're in these big games, all the stuff goes up. And can the ACC show, hey, look, yeah, maybe there's a little more money in the Big 12 if you go there. Or maybe is there something competitively with this playoff berth that can help that out, Ross? Or are we past that point at this point?
I think that when you look at conference realignment the last few years, we've seen so many schools take the money instead of the easier route to the playoff. I just think of USC and UCLA's decision, as well as Washington and Oregon's decision, and Oklahoma's decision in Texas as well. Look at all these programs and their decision. It was about money and not an easier route to the playoffs. So that doesn't seem to be important to
these programs. It's not the trend now, but could it reverse?
Yeah. Could it reverse? Right. I don't see that, right? Nothing. I don't sense that. I don't sense Florida State and Clemson reversing course unless they literally have nowhere else to go, which could be the case, right? We've talked about quite a bit that there doesn't seem to be interest in where they want to go in them. And so if they were to reverse course in some way, it probably would be because of the lack of a landing spot and not some chase for the playoff, because money seems to still be winning out, right, in every capacity, which for your fan base and your fans, I don't know, doesn't seem right. Your fans and your fan base want to win, and they want championships, and an easier route to the playoff is probably the route you should take. But, you know, we're obviously in this race for cash.
I mean, would you rather be South Carolina or Clemson?
Yeah. To me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Much rather be Clemson. But dancing, now you're talking crazy here, talking about what the fans may like and winning and things like that when you should be talking about revenue. Grants of rights is, come on, mm-hmm. that's what's the yes, fabric of college football,
Dan.
Baby.
Here I am talking about football.
Yeah, no, we're going to get this. I think this is a major rubber meets the road season, and will be a rubber meets the road era here that we're entering into with how quote unquote costly or cost versus benefit these realignment moves are. Because we're going to see now. Oklahoma is picked eighth in the SEC. They may not end up eighth. They may end up being good enough to get in the playoff. They're never picked eighth. They've never been. I mean, somebody, I posed the question on Twitter, and somebody found like a Sporting News 1997 where they were picked eighth in the Big 12. But like, this doesn't happen for them. And so you are trading the chance to own a league for the chance to make more money. We'll see how that goes. Texas A&M played in Big 12 championship games. Hadn't played in one in the SEC since they moved there.
Nebraska.
But we're going to, yeah, Nebraska, absolutely. Nebraska used to be a contender. You know, we'll see what happens to the likes of Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA when they're in now with with Ohio State and Michigan.
I always go back to the quote that Bob Boolsby, former Big 12 commissioner, gave me earlier this spring. The traditional winners will turn into traditional losers in their new league. You can imagine probably who he was more pointing to as he was the Big 12 conference commissioner for a while. But I'm sure he was probably referring to a lot of programs, some of the same ones that we're discussing.
It's weird. Look, we've discussed this a lot, but it's like, as a fan, what are you looking for out of your football program? What is your athletic department looking for? Like, what does your school want out of, like, you want to win games.
Yeah.
And you want to have fun games. Now, I understand the schedule might get more exciting because more really good teams are coming in, but if you're losing those games, you know, you look at the NFL. And when teams aren't winning, even the NFL, they stop coming to the games. Or the NBA, if your team's down, all of a sudden it's easy to get tickets. So when they're winning, everyone's all excited. It's winning is what you want to do. And playing ACC football is pretty fun. There's enough good, exciting games, and you're in your region and all that. And I don't, you know, one of the best things they ever did in college athletics, or the best tricks they pulled, was getting fans to pull for revenue. And I was sitting with some guys the other day. We were talking about Notre Dame and how, you know, Notre Dame's got to join the Big Ten, or the argument. No one was advocating it because, you know, look, Purdue makes more money on TV and Indiana makes more money on TV. And you go, who the hell cares? Notre Dame feels like it's Notre Dame. Like, and have you ever been to Notre Dame and said, boy, if only they could get some money. This place is rich as hell. They got a golden dome. They literally have golden dome. Their buildings are made of gold. Like, if you're a fan of Notre Dame, you're not going, where's that revenue check? But somehow they've gotten the, you know, I gotta get that revenue, where, because it's always the existential threat that's coming. You're not going to be able to compete. We're not going to be able to compete unless you do what the administrator tells you. And in the end, I don't know, man, Florida State's a good place to go play football. And they're going to have enough money for football. It's easier to raise that gap money or enough to be competitive than it is to go jump into a league where you all of a sudden have to, you're staring up at 9 or 10 teams that are equal to you.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Florida State is, and Clemson both, but Florida State to me is the most interesting one because they've been on the forefront of agitating for this, and they have been able to win national championships in the ACC, and I guess you can look ahead and doom and gloom yourself into believing it's just not going to be possible again. But to your point, Dan, there's a lot of good football players around that area who would like to play near home so their families can come and see them in front in an 86,000-seat stadium or whatever Doak Campbell is, and, you know, get all the attention, and the NFL scouts can absolutely find you. I have a hard time buying this. Now, there's been smart people on, very smart people on Twitter who have assured me that Florida State has smart people who have a handshake agreement that they're going somewhere. SEC, Big Ten, it's done. It's done. It's fine. We're going to be fine.
I wouldn't trust those handshakes, buddy. This is college sports.
Remember the gentleman's agreement?
The alliance.
It's a gentleman's agreement. Didn't need no pen to paper.
Florida, if Jordan Travis doesn't get hurt last year, how do we know Florida State doesn't win the national championship last year?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the path was there for them, and for the, you know, it was a terrible break, and I feel bad for them, and I still think they probably should have gotten in over Alabama. But that's what, it's a broken leg that if that doesn't happen, you can't blame Jim Phillips and the ACC like they did. Oh, he couldn't get in because of them. You know, that was a specious argument, I thought.
Well, and how about this? If this is your team and you're in the SEC or you're in the Big Ten, which is where they want to go, and Jordan Travis breaks his leg and you go to the SEC or Big Ten championship game, you are not winning that game.
No.
Right? They had to go to the third string QB, I think. It was a mess.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah, right. Yeah.
You are unlikely to beat Georgia or Michigan. So the dynamics change. I guess I understand Florida State's infuriation last year because it is, okay, the system was broken and everyone tries to, it was a bad system. The 14 playoff was set up by people who didn't want to make a playoff, so they made a crap one. They didn't even think it through. They were dragged to that 14 playoff. And everyone said, how are you going to do this? It's five conferences and four spots. Like, you know, raise your hand. First question. Oh, it'll work out. Well, it didn't work out. But that isn't the case now. You're in. And one of the things I always argued on a big playoff with automatic bids is, could it provide that stability? I get they want out, and I get they're angry, and there's all this bitterness, and like there's lawsuits, and lawyers are arguing is, and it's going on. But I still think this league provides a tremendous opportunity and platform for these schools. There, you could be absolutely competitive. The strength of Florida State is not because of their conference; it's because of Florida State. We've all been there. It's terrific.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's like academically, the school's improving every year. Like, it's a great place to go to college and it's a great place to play football. Clemson. So, like, there's, you can't tell me anywhere else is better than those places. Miami, Florida, it's a different football environment because, you know, they're on campus, but the school's incredible. You're in Miami. Like, that's always been the appeal.
Sure.
It's not, well, wait a minute. Do we have enough money? Like, again, you've been to Miami's campus? Good Lord. It's beautiful. They put up a new dorm. Everything's going up. They got to deal with the health. They have a deal with the hospital. Like, I don't know that this, all this just anger. Oh my God, this is terrible. And I don't know that you really, I think you got a great situation right here. And I think this season in the ACC should be really exciting. At least with those three teams. Cause I think Miami's going to be really interesting.
No, Miami's in a big prove it year for Mario Cristobal, I believe. I mean, they've lined it up again. I mean, you know, they have recruited extremely well. They've hit the transfer portal well. They have a good staff on paper. They have, you know, bumped up collective commitment. So it's all there. You got to just win some games. I mean, last year, they started 4-0. They beat A&M, and everybody thought, oh, here we go. It's going to take off. And then they just absolutely flopped in ACC play. They lost by 3 to Georgia Tech. They lost by 10 to North Carolina. They come back. They beat Clemson, but then they lose to NC State. They lose to Florida State by 7. You lose to Louisville by 7. And you're sitting there with a 7-6 record. And it's Miami that remembers what it's like to be 12-0. And wants to be 12-0, or at least good enough to win the ACC, which is what they were supposed to dominate when they went into the league, and it hadn't happened. And Cristobal was paid an enormous amount of money to come in and turn it around, and it hasn't happened yet. So they brought in Cam Ward at quarterback, the Washington State transfer that there was a big bidding battle to get, and they got to get it done, frankly. Like, they've got to be a top 25 program and a playoff contender, I think, to have any faith in Mario Cristobal going forward.
So I may be the last or the only big, like, I'm a believer in Mario Cristobal, and I understand, take a knee, please. You see, EA Sports says you can take a knee, I guess, in the game.
And really?
Someone had said that, and Georgia Tech football put out, please no. Like, it doesn't, they didn't want that. That was good trolling. I just look at what he did at Oregon. They had a lot of work to do. And by his third recruiting class, his second season, they had less work to do than Miami, maybe. But he comes in 9-4. But that second year, they're 12-2. They go to Ohio State and win. Like, he is recruiting at a level and has stacked these classes up and then filled with the portal. And again, Miami, fantastic place for portal, right?
Yeah. Yes.
They got money. It's, again, incredible school academically, the grad programs, things like that. And yeah, you're sitting to Cam Ward. He's sitting up in Pullman. Hey, man, come on down to Miami. 1 year, we got you. Like, it is, it's set up. And I think he recruits to such a level. And Dan Lanning comes in, and Mario Cristobal is not leaving Oregon, except he wanted to go back to his hometown. I think he's from Miami. He's from South Florida, right? All that. I mean, he's at FIU, all that. South Florida guy. And that's what pulled him back. But I think his recruiting has been so strong, and they've got such depth of talent, they should be very good this year. Last year was not acceptable, but I do see this as a 10-win team. I don't think the schedule's outlandish. They got Florida in that first game, which we've talked about from the Florida perspective, from both sides, as just a massive ladder game, referendum game that first week. And that's what in-state rivalry should be. But then, you know, Florida A&M, Ball State at South Florida, Virginia Tech at home, at Cal, big conference game. At Louisville will be tricky. Florida State, it's going to be a huge game. Duke's interesting. I don't know what to make of Duke this year. Could be good. At Georgia Tech, Wake, at Syracuse. There's a nice season there to be set up for the Hurricanes. And I think Mario Cristobal is still on the right track. And I may be proven, oh boy, is this going to be humiliating that I, because we'll see. But the structural stuff that's set up at Miami is set up to compete at the highest level. I don't know whether they can win a national title, not maybe this present team, but they can absolutely be like a Final Four kind of team or something like that. I don't know. Like, there's nothing at Miami holding it back. The recruits seem to not be worried about, I mean, the only downside to Miami is the stadium situation, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But even that's overcomeable. I don't think that's a major issue.
The South Beach situation often overwhelms the.
Yeah,
I don't get to run out to pulsating 80,000 everything. Yes, and then they don't get to go to the clubs.
That's right. You want to compare that to Starkville? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's little different. So there's pluses and minuses to Coral.
There are
Coral Gables. Yes,
and I do think your point that they're it's a great portal place because A, they do have money, but B, like, how many kids from South Florida are like, oh, I'm going to go away for college. And you may go away and like, I don't like it, I'm going to go back home. Well, if home's Miami and the U is rolling, then it's a great place to go back to.
It's the schedule geographically in recruiting, and this would be portal in. It is the most, you could argue USC also, but there is nothing within is it 5 hours to Orlando now? It used to be 5 to Florida. I guess UCF is now in, maybe it's 4 to Orlando. I've made that drive before. I don't know. But there, you can draw a circle around all the talent in South Florida, and you can't play at home, close to home, within 4 hours at least. And that's UCF. And yes, they're in the Big 12, but I don't think, that's different. Basically, you got to go to Florida, which I think is 5 hours. If you're a kid in Atlanta, you drive a 5 hour circle around your house. You can go to like 40 program, or 10, right? You can go all the way to Alabama, I'd say, Tennessee, Clemson, South Carolina, Georgia, all these things. So that just geographically, if you're a South Florida kid, and it is a unique culture and a unique place, and you want to be playing near home, you want to play, this is the only choice. And that's always been there. And again, you're right. Like, you want to come back? All right, you did your thing. You took off for 3 years. You went off. Ohio State recruits really well. Oh, come on back home. Finish up down here. That's it. Go ahead on the other part. I'm sorry.
No, that's perfectly fine. I was just going to, I'm revisiting the schedule here, and I mean, I just think there's a great chance, if they're doing what they should be doing, that they're 6-0 going to Louisville October 19th and maybe 7-0 hosting Florida State October 26th. And that's the season right there, because after that, Duke in Miami, at Georgia Tech, Wake Forest in Miami, at Syracuse, they will go into the year at least solidly favored in all of those games and in the games preceding that two-game swing of at Louisville and Florida State. So it's there. And that there will be big year three referendum games. Crystal ball against Napier in the opener. Crystal ball against Brent Pry of Virginia Tech September 27th. So those will be, I think, some real big games there that Miami would do well for itself, and Mario Cristobal would do well for himself to win.
All right, we'll be back with more right after this. All right, we talk about a couple other programs here. We don't really do preview shows because I think it kind of really want us to break down the Virginia Cavaliers' expectations this season. I'm not sure Virginia fans want us to break down that.
No.
No. But you mentioned some other contenders, Louisville, NC State, maybe Georgia Tech. We'll see what Carolina can do. I'm intrigued.
SMU, baby.
SMU. I'm intrigued at what Syracuse is going to do under Fran Brown. I don't know if they're going to win this year, but it's that right. Program's got a little pop to it, certainly, in every other way. Pitt, who else in this league? Bill O'Brien at BC. Like, it's an interesting story. I think I said... Yeah. We talked about this. You can go back through the spring too. Like, we talk about all these programs at some point. If you look at our old episodes, go and re-listen. Still free. Like, BC to me, pound for pound, had the best hire in college football.
Yep.
They got the former did a good job at Penn State, was an excellent coach at the Houston Texans, was not a good GM. Comes off a Nick Saban staff. Bill Belichick has almost 100% name recognition in New England because he worked with Belichick and Brady, and BC gets him. Like, that's a hell of a hire for BC, who's normally grabbing, hey, I got the defensive coordinator from somewhere, right? Okay, hope it works out. Bill O'Brien, we kind of is a known quantity, and he's from Boston, and he's from the Catholic League up there and all that. So, like, who, one or two of those, or three, whatever, are you most interested in their season, even if it's not to contend?
Yeah, I will say that in terms of new coaches, there's three fascinating ones in the league, and that's obviously O'Brien, who you mentioned, Fran Brown, who has really gotten after it in recruiting, but then Manny Diaz at Duke. I mean, Mike Elko got Duke to a position of, you know, contending and prominence and, you know, winning seasons, going to bowls. They beat Clemson last year. Can Manny Diaz keep it going? I thought Manny Diaz got a little bit of a kind of a raw deal at Miami. Really didn't have a bad run there, and then went to Penn State, did great work as defensive coordinator there. So give him another shot as a head coach. I'm curious to see if they can keep that momentum going at Duke. Elko did inherit some very good players, especially on the lines, that they will no longer have, and so there's going to have to be some rebuilding there on the lines. But I think Duke is one of those schools that, like, hey, maybe they should be a little bit better than they have been historically. And Cutcliffe got them to a level, and now can they go to the next level? But I'm fascinated by SMU. Talked about them, literally bought their way into the club to become a Power Conference member. You know, talk about a place that's positioned well for the portal. Yeah, go ahead and leave the Metroplex and go to school somewhere else. And then when you're tired of that, come on home. We got money. We'll bring you back in the collective and take a chance here. And Rhett Lashley's, I think, a really good, promising coach. Preston Stone's a very good quarterback. They're bringing two quarterbacks to media days, which is interesting. So, like, the ACC has 19 quarterbacks for 17 schools coming to media days. So, yeah. But I think they've got a chance to step in and kind of be a disruptor right away.
Florida State and Wake Forest are not bringing a quarterback. Cal, Duke, and North Carolina are bringing two. the QB competition. Like that, two quarterbacks. It's fantastic. Yeah. I remember a national champion, BCS championship media day with Ohio State where Jim Tressel sent the punter out for a on a platform for people to talk about the punt, talk to the punter. Like, you know, you're like, this goes against college football bedrock values. Quarterback controversy. Cal, Duke, and Carolina are like, we'll take any attention we can get at this point. Please ask have them fight. Have them like trash talk each other. Go for it. I don't know. 19 QBs.
And hey, maybe this helps us further keep the backup in the fold in terms of I don't want to transfer.
Well, yeah, there's that too, right?
Take care of me.
Yeah, can't leave because, we believe in you. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, even right now, see how camp goes. See how camp goes. Mm-hmm. Hey, Virginia Tech could have a good season. There's a lot of really, it's going to be a really interesting league for who's going to try to jump up into that. I think everyone kind of looks at the top three, but who jumps in on that? And you mentioned Louisville and some of these. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting season. By the way, Ross had to go work. He had to go do something. So that's why you're not here, Ross. You know,
meeting very important people in hotel coffee shops.
Coffee with somebody important, we hope.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who could be more important than us, Pat.
Nobody.
I don't.
You kidding me? I mean,
probably.
Dabo sitting down with him, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. Maybe. But, you know, really? I mean. Kind of hurts.
I would rather have coffee with us than coffee with Dabo.
Yeah, there you go. I got coffee right here. I mean, it hurts a little. Hurts a feeling. I have feelings. Human.
Buried deep underneath that flinty exterior of yours.
Ross hates recruiting, so we can talk a little recruiting while he's gone.
Good call. Good
Screw
call.
Him. Screw you, Ross. Working. Doing work. LSU had a big recruiting weekend. DJ Pickett, cornerback. At least I can pronounce cornerback, not making it sound like quarterback. Cornerback from Florida. Top 10 recruit nationally by a lot of people. And Derek Meadows, a wide receiver, another five-star out of Bishop Gorman, the powerhouse out in Vegas. Both going with Brian Kelly and the Tigers. Both obviously out-of-state recruits. LSU's inability to get cornerbacks has been one of the more perplexing things ever because they used to just swim in them. So that was a big win by Kelly. Meadows is a real game breaker. And interestingly, maybe his number two was Notre Dame. And he ended up choosing LSU over Notre Dame and a bunch of others. But there had been some grumblings. Maybe LSU's not recruiting well enough. They did get, many people believe, the number one player in the country in Bryce Underwood, who's out of Michigan. So they're going all over to get everybody. Brian Kelly, obviously, always had national recruiting ties when you're at Notre Dame. But that's a nice weekend for Brian Kelly, if he can keep all these guys going into a season where, you know, the fan base isn't 100% sold on him. It always helps to win in recruiting. And I'm sure it's personally enjoyable to defeat Notre Dame head to head.
Oh yeah, and personally infuriating for Notre Dame fans for sure. But the enmity for Brian Kelly is lifelong from there now because he left us and supposed to us leaving him and firing.
He did a great job there.
He did do a great job. He did. Absolutely.
Where were you before? I mean, that's
yeah. And frankly, look, I think he's done a very good job at LSU. Went to the SEC championship game his first year, had a Heisman Trophy winner his second year. Yeah, they lost some games. Their defense has not been good enough. But, I mean, I think you combine, I think you stick with Brian Kelly. He will get you where you want to go. He's a proven coach that, you know, everywhere he's been, he's won. And he's going to do it there, too. And if you, okay, maybe you're not quite totally dominating the state of Louisiana yet, but yeah, you go get a receiver from Las Vegas, you get a corner from Florida. Yeah, you're doing
QB
just fine
from Michigan.
Yeah,
it'll work. Yeah, he's got a edge rusher from Indianapolis. They're all over. I don't know what it is in state. They haven't quite wrapped that up yet, but maybe they get there. I think it's tough for Notre Dame with Derek Meadows. Notre Dame only has so many cracks at a true five-star guy. You know, when you're dealing with five stars, you're recruiting against generally the same schools, right? So it's going to be Alabama, it's going to be Georgia, it's going to be LSU, it's going to be Ohio State, it's going to be maybe USC, whatever. The guys that get the LSU is obviously going to be in there. Texas, Notre Dame, there's only so many of those guys. Like all 30, if there's 35 of them, all 35 will get called from Alabama and be like, okay, I'm kind of interested. What do you got? Notre Dame, they may not, there may only be 20, there might be 20 of them that they can get in or whatever, you know, academically, and how many are really interested. So you generally, Notre Dame's in on like two or three guys, that's it, a year that they even have, and maybe not even that. So when they got their chance, they like, because that's that pop of five-star talent Notre Dame struggles to get, because Notre Dame's recruiting class is excellent but it's going to be lots and lots of four stars. Not, you know, LSU's got 3 5 stars, Notre Dame's got none, so it's just the way it goes. But yeah, I think Brian Kelly, if you give him time, will be fine. He's a good football coach. I get why Notre Dame fans got tired of him, but he also did an awful lot to build the stability of that program.
He did, and this feels to me the, you know, Brian Kelly versus Notre Dame afterlife thing, where there's going to be not be a clear cut, oh well, we are much better without him, or he's much better without us. I don't think it's going to. I think both of them can be successful. And you're not going to get to the point where, well, see, Brian Kelly became a failure because he left, or Notre Dame was left in ashes because he left. I just don't think either way that's going to work out.
You know, Fat Bear Week comes in the fall.
Yep.
Where they have their Bears. 747 was robbed last year by a bad picture. It's a bad picture, made 747 look too thin. They got his good side. But anyway, we'll discuss that more when Fat Bear Week comes.
A very, very specious claim of election fraud from
election
Dan
fraud in the Fat Bear Week. Well, who won it? The woman, the, what was it? What's the female one? Chunk? Or
yeah, I can't.
It was rigged. It was rigged. That is an Alaskan national park. Okay, it's not like the world championship. I'll take 747 against anybody. All right. This is an Olympic year. We're going to root for the American bear. But
ride or die with 747.
Ride or die. But this story has come to our attention because people know we like big, huge grizzly bears. Banff Park in Canada. Yeah, I mean, I got to respect the Canadian grizzly, right? I mean, that's, you know, it's like their basketball team now. You kind of got to give them a. I'm not just going to totally dismiss it.
At your peril.
Officially known as Bear Number 122, nickname is the Boss. The Boss has emerged from hibernation, and people in Alberta are running to the mountains to catch this guy. He is a legendary bear in Banff National Park. This is from the Canadian broadcast company, so very official. He's the most dominant grizzly bear in and around the park. He's eaten a black bear.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
He's been struck by a train and survived. Brushed it off. He got hit. I'm going to read this little story. When he was only 15 years old, he got hit by a train and doesn't care. He just continues to walk along the railroads anyway.
Wow. Tough bear.
Probably learned he's a lesson from that, making sure that he gets himself off the tracks when the train is approaching, said Stephen Michael, a human wildlife conflict specialist.
Conflict specialist. See, kids, there's lots of jobs out there.
There are a lot of jobs. What do you do? Yeah. I mean, you meet a grizzly bear conflict specialist from Banff at a cocktail party? I'm not moving. That dude's got stories.
That's right.
He weighs 650. His size is massive. He's missing a chunk of his right ear. They don't know why. But everybody likes him. There's not a lot of bears that look like him. This is a fan, Tasha Barnett of Bearberry. Altoona, what is it? Alberta. I don't know. ALTA, that's how they've been. Alberta. I would have done that differently. It must be spelled Canadian. I don't think I've seen a better looking bear, and I have seen a few bears. You go, Tasha. She drove 2 hours just to see him.
Wow.
Let's see. What are some of his
He's popular with the female bears. He's the Sean Kemp of Alberta up there, Banff, because he's allegedly fathered like 70% of the bears in this area.
Yeah, he seems to have a way. He knows how to sweet talk the female bears, how it works. That's how it works. Many children. That's why he's out there busy working all the time trying to hunt. Yeah, this guy's a monster. There's a lot of pictures. I did not know that much about the boss until recently. But everybody is, everyone's getting fired up to go see him. If you live in Alberta, you can go up there and check him out. But he beats the hell out of the other bears. Strong, bigger, stronger. I don't know whether we could set something up, him and like our champion in Alaska, Dana White, right. Get in on this or something.
Where's neutral ground between Alaska and Banff? Do we have some? Is there somewhere in there?
Maybe get him out on like one of those deadliest catch boats. the Northwestern fishing vessels, Northwestern. Captain Sig could be the judge. The bear fight right there on the deck. Could lure him with crabs. I don't know. I don't know how it works.
I'm looking here.
This is like, we're just fanboying this bear. Our end of the show segment usually has nothing to do with anything, but this really has nothing to do with anything.
You know what? You can't even drive from the Katmai Peninsula to Banff National Park, but according to Google Maps, and there are no flights. And so, you know, like, to get them together, you really might need the crab guys to come through with a boat to meet them up there. You could look.
No flights into Banff.
Yeah, tough. Easier to fly into Banff than to Katmai, I believe. We might have to go to the Yukon.
We'll get them on the
Yukon
railroad
territory.
We know the train goes through. We know the train.
Yeah.
How do you get hit by a train and survive? I mean, that's a badass. No wonder the women are just like the female bears. Yeah. Are like that guy.
Yeah. I could just brush it off. No problem.
The boss comes around. What'd the train look like?
Yeah.
All right. I don't know.
I'm going to advocate for a neutral site meeting of 747 and the boss in Yukon territory.
Power slap or a real fight? I don't know. I don't want to see either one go. Power slap.
No. Yeah. We don't want a death in the competition. But
who knows? I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, that's it. We don't have anything other than we're just really excited about this bear. We are. Says a lot more about us than the bear. Bear doesn't care about us. Probably doesn't even listen to the pod.
We're getting ready to go to Paris here. We got to fill with what we got. We got a fat bear. Fat bear that gets hit by trains and doesn't care.
I know this. Like, American or Canadian bear, there is, like, a French bear? Come on. They even have bears? I don't think so. We'd whip the bears. If it was the Olympics, we'd be gold and silver finalists would at least be in some order. America, Canada. That's what I think. Although maybe the Russians are they got banned from the Olympics, so they're not even coming.
See, yeah, they would dope their bears, but I'm sure they could pull some hosses out of the Siberian.
I respect the Russian bear, but yeah, they'd be doped up. They're banned.
Yeah. Does Mongolia have bears? They seem like that'd be a kind of place they might have some bears. Mongolia? They might have some bears up there.
I don't know. I don't know where else the bears are big. Someone will tell us. Could be like
someone will.
Greenland or something would finally win a medal.
Yeah, this is their big chance. Scandinavia's got to have some bears, right?
You wonder why Ross bails out at the end of the show to go do work. It's just like, this is
Olympic
so
bear
stupid.
Wrestling is a good topic. It's a good topic.
This is so stupid. This is such a waste of my time. I'm just going to schedule a meeting after 45 minutes of the pod every show. I'm now on to Ross. I'm now on to it. He's not even meeting with anyone. He's just eating some pancakes downstairs or something. All right. We'll be back later this week. Big Ten, media days. Then Pat and I head to Paris. But we'll keep broadcasting then. So thank you for listening. Share us on social media. We will talk to you later.